Well, no, thanks, Jackson. I'm Tim Owl. Dave's Catena on the board. S&P futures up 29. We're trying to bounce back here. Dow futures up 212. NASDAQ futures up 109. Yesterday was an odd one. Dow was flat. S&P and NASDAQ were up, so it's kind of in the opposite direction there. We'll see where this goes today. We have Lou with us.
I am here. Good morning.
How are you, bud?
Doing okay. It's first big snowfall up in the mountains this week. We may get some more today. So I know at least one ski area is open. I think it's at Loveland. So, winter's coming.
Aren't they the traditional first one to open?
Yeah, they've got north-facing slopes, so the sun doesn't melt the snow quite so much. And they had a good snowfall. The western part of the state got hit pretty good, so everybody's kind of, looking longingly at their ski racks and thinking, I can already wait to get on I-70 and get stuck for 4 hours in traffic.
Well, what's the story with, what are lift tickets now, $1.50?
Sorry, say again?
What are lift tickets now, $1.50 at a good place?
I think that's actually what you're running. It's I think if you buy in advance at Breck, I think it's around $140, $150.
So a grand for the family to ski.
Oh yeah, I mean one of the great deals that Vail Resorts offers is for military retirees, because Vail Resorts was founded by a bunch of ex 10th Mountain Division guys. So if you're a retired military, I think your season pass is less than a day of regular skiing at Breck. And that lets you go all season. Now it doesn't work at every Vail Resorts property, but for the ones in Colorado and the ones I could get to in 1 hour or two, those are all accessible. So even if I don't plan on skiing a lot, I buy that pass every year.
When are people going to realize the depth of where this inflation is? John Deere people went on strike this morning in Moline, 10,000 people, and the company offered them like a 5% raise. So I don't know when that's from, if it's from last year, but if it's from like a few years ago, who the hell are they kidding? What was the price of traffic, sir?
Chief, you're the press secretary, the one with the intelligence with a two clam intelligence or whatever it is, or half a clam intelligence. Yesterday I think that people aren't really comparing prices, from now and back, looking back a year or two. And I heard that, and I thought there's some stupid things that have come out of the mouths of press secretaries, but that's got to be one of the dumbest. Everybody I know is looking at prices and looking at how much things are going up, and looking at what's happening on the West Coast with the port backups, and thinking to themselves, we're really seeing some significant price gains in a very short time.
Did you?
I don't know when it's going to level out, but. We're looking at some real inflation this year.
Why is it going to level out? The Fed is continuing to put gas on the fire. Did you hear I've kind of refrained from, everybody's hero is just Cathie Wood, because she's bought all these basically, I won't say worthless, but stocks that have, the ME stocks and those things, everything that's run up because of, because they've gone up, basically, the momentum stocks, for lack of a better term. And a lot of people have made some money in there, so I'm not begrudging them. I wish I was one that bought some at five and sold them at like 100 or so. Of course, I'd never ridden them that far, but when somebody, it doesn't take much to get an audience. I mean, her quote yesterday was that people moving away, now here's a lady that should have taken an economics class somewhere along the line. People moving out of the high-priced cities will be a drag on inflation, so don't worry about it. I'm like, what is she talking about? Who does that have anything to do with the price of rice?
Not that I can tell, but I'm just a lawyer, so I some of these higher end monetary concepts and economic public policy concepts are beyond me.
Well, it's kind of real simple. Everything you own, everything you've ever touched has a value to it, and the value pretty much is derived by its scarcity, right? Just about anything that you have. I mean, and then there's relative values to relative other things. Why is it so difficult for people to get, especially people that we pay to run the place, that money is no different than any other good? If all of a sudden we find gold in everybody's backyard, guess what? The price of gold's going down in relation to other stuff because there's so much of it, right? This is not that hard to figure out. So when the Fed pumps in, the idea of matching your money supply growth to the growth of the economy has been around for centuries. And when you triple the money supply growth based on your growth, you're going to end up with inflation because you've got more dollars chasing the same amount of goods. This is not that difficult.
Yet. No, but if you have a poorly educated population that, you know, just... I'm going to go back to something that... And I'll cut my thought off. I'll go back to something that you talked about, and that is that the people making the policy right now, the president and the people around him, have been captured by, I think, the very progressive elements in the Democratic Party.
I wouldn't exactly call it progressive. I'd call it something, but I wouldn't call it progressive.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, Ocasio-Cortez and what's-her-face from St. Louis, Cory Buck, and these other people. I would call them the highly, you know, pseudo-communists or very aggressive socialists who really believe that as long as you keep printing money, you're okay. And that whatever short-term social ills we have, or whatever social ills we have, we could fix by just putting the right programs in place. And I think that this view has captured the policymaking.
Well, let's put it this way, Louis.
At the White House, because there's no, you know, Biden didn't run on this. He ran on a completely different kind of platform. And yet, you know, they're doing things like the hard infrastructure bill. I call it the hard infrastructure bill. There's a lot of softness in it, but the hard infrastructure bill was a generally bipartisan effort that they could have passed, but they have now tied it to this $3 trillion monstrosity that has all this social justice stuff built into it. And why you would do that? I mean, when you've got majorities in the House and the Senate that are razor thin, and there's just a complete unwillingness to compromise, which, by the way, I also tie to the more progressive elements of the Democratic Party. Not saying that's restricted there to them, but that's a characteristic of this group. And it mystifies me as to why we're going hard over, why the president and his people are going hard over on stuff that is tanking the rest of their accomplishments. And I back away from that because I don't really have a good handle on how economic policy works. I mean, I'm an employment guy, but I can tell you that the employment ramifications of this are huge in terms of things like you just saw John Deere's people walking off. You've got other job actions being contemplated, and you know I'd like to talk a little bit today about the airline pilots and what's happening with that crew.
Well, the John Deere thing, I suppose I could research it. I mean, I could, who knows? Maybe we can get somebody on the show. But I'm what those people need. I should not do this on the air. I should make sure I'm a consultant with a retainer. What those people need is a serious escalation clause, COLA clause in that contract if they don't have one. They should be getting a 5.4 raise this year anyway, Lou. That's what the inflation is. That shouldn't be the raise. That should happen before you get a raise.
So let's talk a little bit about this issue in terms of negotiating. And I'm gonna divert it now to the COVID situation because that's a clear marker that has been getting a lot of attention. Organized labor and all of the airlines are organized, have organized labor elements. Some of them are organized top to bottom, pilots, flight attendants, maintenance people, gate agents. Some of them are only organized at certain levels. So, for example, Delta has got a pilots union but does not have a flight attendants union or a maintenance union, which, by the way, is consistent with their southern roots. Roots, R-O-O-T-S. All of this stuff that you see with respect to the vaccine mandates that are coming down from these companies are supposed to be union, are supposed to be negotiated. If you have a union in place, you can't make these kinds of unilateral changes to your workforce structure, such as requiring everybody to be vaccinated or tested or anything like that. You can't do that without negotiating. There has to be, you have to go to the union and say, we want to introduce this, and let's come up with a trade-off of some kind. This isn't happening for some reason. I'm astounded at it, but it's not. And this is one of the reasons that the United pilots went to court last week. Their union took the company to court on the, excuse me, on the grounds that the company failed to negotiate, had just unilaterally imposed these changes in work, and had failed to negotiate through there. Most of the airline contracts now have no strike clauses, which is why the Southwest Pilots Union was being very careful last week, last weekend, saying we're not engaging in a job action. And that was true. The union was not engaging in a job action. What apparently was happening, according to my contacts in the industry, was that for the Southwest pilots, the word was out that if you weren't vaccinated, they were going to fire you. And because of the way these contracts work, pilots are allowed to, air crew are allowed to roll over unused paid time off to an extent that I don't think is comparable to any other industry. So you have 20, 15, 20 year pilot employees who would have 10 months of paid time off, and they lose that if they get fired. So all of a sudden, these Southwest pilots looked around and said, we're going to get fired in about, a month or two. I've got lots of paid time off that I'm going to lose. I can take that paid time off as sick time, for example, and I'm going to burn it up before I get fired. And you had this massive wave of pilots, I'm sure, talking to each other on email and social media, saying, Why should we burn up all of our, lose all of our paid time off? We'll just take it all now. And, Southwest, like every other airline, keeps a reserve of pilots that are on a mandatory replacement or mandatory call-up status. So if somebody gets sick or somebody can't make a flight, they have people in every major city where they've got bodies that they can say, okay, this guy didn't make his airplane, or is not going to make his flight. You're next up. You've got to go pick the flight up. But they've only got a certain number of those. And once that supply is exhausted, they have to go back to the regular workforce and tell these guys, hey, we need pilots to handle flights where people are no longer available, and you get premium pay. I think it's triple your normal rate or whatever it is. For coming to the rescue of the company when you don't have to. What happened at Southwest is they ran through their reserves almost immediately. And then they started calling people to come in and help. And a significant portion of those people said, you know what, I might be on board with getting a vaccination. You can force me to get a vaccination because I want to keep my flying career and I need to put a paycheck on the table. But I'm not helping you with your program after that. So I'm not going, you can offer me premium pay or triple pay. I'm not taking it. I'm stepping back. And as a result, Southwest canceled, I think it was 2,000 flights over the Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, it was 1,800 I saw, but
yeah,
close enough.
Yeah, and so this, and guess what happened? Guess what happened yesterday? The Southwest CEO came out and said, we're not firing anybody if you don't comply with the vaccine mandate. Because he could see the handwriting on the wall that you know, the next time we get we're looking at a staffing shortage and we can't make it up. We are going to lose. I mean, we got people with reservations going out, you know, months. We can't make those flights. We don't have the manpower to make those flights. I can't staff them.
And it's the only
I'm going to be able to staff them is to remove the incentive to burn all of this paid time off.
It's not just
and so
staff
he said, we're not firing anybody.
Well, it's just not numbers of people. I went through a long dissertation. I hope you didn't, and, you know, you didn't ruin your morning by listening to it. I went through this long dissertation about one of the classes I took in grad school. Don't cover your ears. Integer programming and network flows. You know what integer programming is, David or Lou?
Are you talking about the process or mechanism by which you structure how energy gets from or electricity gets from one place to another?
Well, no, that would be sort of easy, relatively okay. Math-wise, because you can have fractions or decimals in virtually everything you do mathematically. One thing you can't is when you're talking about people and other things. So the answers always have to be an integer. So in other words, you need two pilots, one pilot, three pilots. You can't have a half a pilot. So that level of mathematics, the routing of like air crews around the country I don't know if you know what linear program is. I'm sure where there's max min problems and you can say, okay, you gotta have at least 10 people on board. You can't have a minimum of 100. How many people do you need for such and such a thing or how much? It's probably most easily explained when you look at a price list of lumber and you see a big old log sitting there and the mills now will look at the log, x-ray the log and will cut the log into 2x4s, 2x6s basically based on the prices of today. Okay, right. So it's a pretty good mathematics, but nobody cares if you end up with half a 2x4, right? It's a 2x2, but with people it's different. So I think I could never have done this because I didn't do it well in that class. But the idea, the very small monkey wrench, it's not like for 1,800 flights you've got to be missing 500 pilots. You might be just missing 100 or 200.
In fact, again, Southwest, to an even greater extent than United and Delta and American and others, operates on a very quick turnaround model that requires sort of just-in-time crew changes and things like that. One of the pilots that I'm representing right now in this COVID action told me that he was flying, taking Southwest from, I think it was Phoenix to Dallas, and they were at the gate. They had just told the A group to line up, and the first officer comes off the aircraft, walks up across the gate, and realizes that this pilot that I was talking to was deadheading to get to Dallas, and he walked up to him and he said, "We're not going." And the gist of it was they just canceled us. Now this was an airplane full of people. With a crew right there, ready to take off, fully manned, ready to go. And whatever ripple was in the Southwest system caused them to say, you know, that airplane's not going to get that. We don't want that airplane in Dallas. Because once it gets to Dallas, we're not going to be able to do something
right,
with it.
Right, right.
And we need it. We need to have it at Phoenix where we'll be able to do something else with it. Down, you know, four or five steps down the road.
I can't even imagine what it would be like in a scheduling computer room while this is going on, Lou, because now all of a sudden this pilot he might have flown 10 hours and now the flight to Dallas is 3 hours, so he can do that one, but if he's trying to go to Chicago, he can't do it because that's four and he can only fly three more. I mean, it's a nightmare to get this stuff going.
Yeah, the algorithms are very complicated and it's clear that what happened beat the algorithm. So now the next question is, so the pilots in American and Delta and United, they see what happened at Southwest. And they say, oh, so the only thing we've got to do to make sure we don't get fired is not show up for a day or two and watch that system implode And then our CEOs are going to have to come online and say, well, we're not going to fire anybody because we need to remove the incentive for all of you to take your paid time off all at once. And so I saw that American had a big jump in cancellations yesterday. I don't know what the story was on that, but huge jump in cancellations.
It was worse for them.
Could well have been a bunch of pilots saying, "Yeah, we're going to pressure our CEO now."
It's worse for them because if 50 people that happen to be 757 pilots call up on a Monday, you can't take the extra 767 guys and drop them in the 57th. Where Southwest, they fly all the same planes.
Yes. That's right. And that's another factor, which, I mean, to Southwest credit, that's one of the things they do, and it makes them more flexible. But again, when you're on these razor thin margins of just in time management, you know, Southwest turns their airplanes in like 30 minutes. When you're on a schedule that tight.
Did you ever fly them like 25 years ago? 20 years ago?
I'm sorry?
Did you used to fly them 20 years ago?
Oh yeah, yeah. They turned the airplanes in like 20 minutes.
It was scary because they didn't have, like, if you flew to Vegas, they didn't have enough of the 400s, and I don't think the 100s could make it all the way to Vegas. So you'd stop in Tulsa or someplace. Well, as my buddy from Scottsdale used to say, you could always tell the Southwest gates because they had the skid marks on them. Literally, the thing, we landed in Tulsa. Audrey and I were going. We had to do a seminar in Phoenix. We landed in a. And the thing, the guy must have been taxiing at 70 miles an hour. He pulls up to the gate, like, screech, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody's off. Every stewardess, I didn't mean guys in those days, every stewardess is like some 22-year-old, lovely-looking little blonde thing, right? And they're hustling people off, then they're shoving people back on, and they go, just take your seat, find your seat, put your stuff in. Lou, the guy's backing out while people are still putting. Nobody was sitting down.
I watched that and remembered thinking to myself, you know, 20 years ago, well, this is a great idea, but it can't last because we're getting a much older population. And I swear to God, the most frustrating thing in the world, and I've just gotten to the point now where I just don't look, is watching people try to get off an airplane, and especially old people.
Oh,
and
God,
I mean, I say that as a quote retiree. Or an old person, watching old people get off an airplane is just painful.
Well,
and it balls up that fast turnaround model. But my point was the impact, the economic impact of this stuff is starting to ripple through the system. And as an employment lawyer, I'm seeing a lot of exposure of our just-in-time management model really showing its weaknesses in terms of our ability to move stuff and to be, you know, quote, nimble.
Well, and
unquote,
you also have,
to,
you show that,
like this.
It shows the, we've got a dash for break here, but it shows the total lack of comprehension of how our system works when the White House has decided we should work 24/7. You think these people haven't thought of that, Joe? I mean, really?
Well, I mean, there's a great piece in National Review. I shouldn't quote National Review, but anyway, great piece in National Review that asked just exactly what is Pete Buttigieg doing? You know, he's the Secretary of Transportation. Now, what's happening on the West Coast is not all his fault. I mean, for at least some of it is attributable to what the incentives that California has built into its vehicle standards. That was that tweet I sent out yesterday where that guy talked about the fact that California is banning owner-operators from
you know,
being able to work those ports.
That is,
in effect.
By the way, that's I couldn't find that. I don't know if that's true. But I will say this isn't all new. We had a new plant manager at Pullman for about 2 months. Well, he was there a couple of months, and all of a sudden he demanded everybody work on a Saturday. And I was, and this was like a Biden thing. And I was a finance guy, so I went around and I talked to all the people in inventory and so forth. And I went into his office and I said, you know, that's like a really bad idea. And he said, why? I said, because the reason why we're not getting anywhere is because we don't have enough parts for these four operations. That's why the things aren't going anywhere. So if you bring people on a Saturday, they're going to sit around on a Saturday just like they're sitting around today. Oh, really? I'm like, Lou, if it was just a question of people working an extra couple hours, people have figured that out a long time ago.
I mean that's a factor, but there are a lot of parts in this thing.
Right. Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. More than anybody understands. Lou, we got to go break. SP futures up 33, NASDAQ's up 126. I guess that's my point. The amount of parts moving is people don't seem to get. I can't even begin to understand how many are moving, but at least I know there's more than I know. I mean, that's something that I have that I think a lot of these other guys don't. They don't even, they think it's simple. It's not simple, Lou. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks. Get ready. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right now.
Go ahead. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Lou Michaels on the board. Or no, Dave's sitting on the board. Lou Michaels on the phone. We got everybody straight here. S&P futures up 33. NASDAQ futures up 125. Dow futures up 229. Morgan Stanley was a had earnings last night. Let me see where those guys are. I'll find them in a second. I'll pop them up here. They are up $1.50 to 107. Other big movers in the Dow, we got Goldman Sachs up 269. Honeywell up 256. We got Microsoft up 249, almost back to 300 again after ducking under 290 for a while. Can't keep the good market down, David. You know that. We're in Europe. We've got DAX up 133.9%, FTSE up 52.7%, CAC around up 58.9%. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 410. It's 1.5. They've been up and down all week. Shanghai, however, down 3. Not sure where that's coming from. It's up 0.1%. The Hang Seng, they claim that they last traded the other day, so they're not, I don't think they're open today for some reason. Yesterday in the U.S., Dow was down 50 cents after being down 200 points, so let's call that unched. S&P was up 13, NASDAQ was up 105. The inflation numbers came out and showed 5.4% year over year, yet the bands went up. So we're not exactly sure why that is. Inflation does not seem to be breaking down, and Fed Bullard, I think he might be St. Louis, came out and basically said this is a monetary phenomenon. It has nothing to do with checkpoints in the economy or whatever we're calling them. So today we got the Fed 10-year down to 1.52. It hit 160 the other day. Now it's come back down here. As I said, bonds were up yesterday. The bond minus back down to minus 0.16 from minus 0.11 the other day. Japan down to 0.08 from 0.09. So we got interest rates going the other way, which is kind of strange. Oil up 97 cents, 81.41. Brent up 98 cents, 84.16. Natural gas up 13 cents, 5.72. Pushing back towards 6. We've got gold up 5.30, right exactly $1,800. Exactly. That we won't never that happen too often, David. Silver up 18 cents, 23.35. Copper up 3 cents to 4.55. So gold's up basically $70 in the last week or so. But still, 1800 is not anywhere near 1900, wherever it was a while back. And we've got Bitcoin up 814 to 57,895. David, what do you got as traffic, weather, sports? It is dreary out, and has been for like 4 days.
Yes, it is. 6:38 in Chicago. My weather this morning, currently it's 70 with a light rain. We're probably at our highs, but we'll have an overcast afternoon, 71 degrees. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 56 and clear. They're going to have 80 degrees and sunny today. Traffic, very slow traffic on this rainy morning. Accident on the Kennedy eastbound at Harlem. We have an accident on the Eisenhower right before Lake Street. The right lane is blocked. Congestion stop and go. And 55 North is heavy traffic. In sports, Major League Baseball, Dodgers at Giants for Game 5 tonight. And the ALCS and NLCS will start this weekend. NFL tonight, Tampa Bay at Philly. Bears play Green Bay at home this Sunday. And undefeated Arizona Cardinals at Cleveland. In the NHL, the Blackhawks lose the opener to Colorado 4-2. And Arizona opens up tonight at Columbus. And in the WNBA Finals, Game 2, the Phoenix Mercury beat Chicago Sky 91-86. Back to you, Tom.
Louis, you know, when you are talking about, you know, this COVID situation and the vaccines and essentially the government forcing companies to do their bidding, for lack of a better term, the thing that I'm kind of shocked about, because in my industry, you know, I've watched it go from, well, I've watched it change over 40 years to the point where, you know, the biggest bum in the world is a broker, right? I mean, everybody else charges for their services, but if a broker does, you know, he's a bum, right? And people are actually giddy about, you know, free commissions when, you know, all you do is shift the customer to the person that's being paid on the other end. Okay. So, I mean, not anybody would really feel comfortable going to a free dentist, I don't think. But brokerage is different. I'm putting one over on somebody. You know, having said that, I mean, I'm grousing here a little bit, but in our industry, Lou, this has been going on for a long time. It's almost like we are the guinea pig for where the government wants to go here. Every year, the biggest thing that, and I'm saying the last 15 years, FINRA wants to do when you have an audit, because you usually get an audit every 2-3 years. Every time, the number one thing on their agenda is screwing down this outside activity deal from people who are registered. And what in God's name, Lou, this is any of their friggin' business? I have no idea. In other words, I mean, if you went to work for Schwab and these big companies tomorrow, they've actually just piled into the whole thing. That's what I love, big companies. You cannot have an outside job if you're a Schwab guy. I mean, if you went and painted somebody's house on a Saturday, you'd be fired. I mean, if you told them or did something, you might get away with it, but they basically don't want you doing that. They don't want you being a waiter on a Saturday night because you need to do nothing like that. I mean, they've been able to work this through the system and the regs to where you have incredible responsibility to make sure you know what your people are doing 20 hours, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Luke, this has been a trial run. It doesn't surprise, everybody else is stunned by what's happening, even you at a little extent, is stunned by what's happening with the airlines and in the COVID. This is just their opportunity. I don't know who the theys are, Lou, but this has been a theme now for a long time.
Man. You ought to see the, one of the cases I'm involved in deals with federal employees and contractors, and you ought to see the level of control that is now being exerted by the organizations that these people work for in terms of tracking vaccine compliance and vaccination rates. It's one of the most intrusive things I've ever seen. And the irony, of course, is that we have a whole body of law that sits out there that was supposed to protect against this and was supposed to preclude these kinds of mass determinations by an employer or mass assumptions by an employer about a particular condition or a particular medical status. And it's astounding to me how fast that has just been whitewashed. Let me just give you an example, and this is something that again goes to the heart of this vaccine licensing issue. We still do not have in the United States a licensed vaccine for COVID. The FDA licensed the vaccine in August 23 that doesn't exist here in the United States. As a result, now you would not know that from listening to the Biden people or listening to my healthcare provider, which sent me a letter saying, we now have a fully approved vaccine right. That you can use.
Yep.
That's a lie. Okay? And I assume it's a knowing lie. But FDA did not license the vaccines that are currently in use. They are all being used under this emergency use authorization statute. The emergency use authorization statute says, very straightforwardly, you have to have informed consent from the patient before you inoculate them with an emergency use vaccine, and they have to have the option to refuse. Now, this will be news to almost everybody that's being subject to the vaccine mandates, and certainly to the people that are going to be subject to President Biden's OSHA mandate that is supposedly in the works right now. But what I find fascinating is that the private sector, the courts have said that the private sector really isn't involved in or doesn't have to comply in a meaningful way with that statute. You have the option to refuse in the private sector, says a court, because you can always quit and walk away rather than take the shot.
Yeah, but you can't let us get down to four airlines, and then quitting is not an option because you've let cartels take over.
That's where it gets interesting. So now, when the government orders you to take the shot, then you fall directly under this FDA program, and you could point to that FDA language and say, wait a minute, I'm supposed to have the option to refuse. The Department of Justice, looking at this, writes a legal opinion in last July, that says, what does the words have the option to refuse mean? I'll give you three guesses, and the first three don't count, as to what they came up with. Option to refuse, according to this very poorly written Department of Justice legal memorandum, because they were trying to hide exactly what their conclusion was or the recommendation they were making. The option to refuse means you can refuse and we won't strap you to a chair and stick the needle in your arm. So that's what option to refuse means. You have the option to say, I'm not going to take the shot, and you will not be physically restrained and inoculated. Everything else that happens after you refuse to take the shot is not protected. So your employer could fire you, they could suspend you, they can, you know, cut off your employment references, everything. That's the Department of Justice's opinion, which was obviously written to support a mandatory federal program that requires this. Now, that ought to scare the hell out of anybody. But there is a way out. And it goes back to a case that I actually was lead on back in 2005, involving anthrax vaccination. We had shut the military's anthrax vaccination program down. We had gotten a permanent injunction from a court saying you can't inoculate people with this stuff involuntarily because it's not properly licensed. So So the Department of Defense went to Health and Human Services and FDA and said, we need you to declare an emergency so that we can emergency use authorize this vaccine. And FDA dutifully did that, but they put conditions on the use of the vaccine and said, look, our statute requires both informed consent and the option to refuse. And in the case of this vaccine, this unlicensed vaccine, which is now being used as an emergency substitute, option to refuse means you can't take negative action against these people. And I'm not sure the Department of Justice people caught that. They probably did and just ignored it. But there's only been maybe one or two of these EUA situations arising in the last 30 years. And that the one involving a vaccine that's not licensed says you can't take negative action against people if they refuse to take the shot, because that's what the option to refuse means in the language of the statute.
What's changed?
And we are just steamrolling that.
What's changed is people's attitude. I think people are two things.
I don't think people's attitudes have changed. I think the government.
Yours hasn't. Mine hasn't. But I think a lot of people feel, hey, this is good enough. You got to take it because I want you to. I mean, it's a whole different.
And that's so. If this vaccine was licensed, then I would agree with you. If it's a licensed vaccine, all of this stuff goes away. What I find horrific is that we set up a specific legal regimen to protect people from being forced to take a shot that is not licensed, that is in effect experimental, that is in effect only being authorized because we have an emergency going on.
Why do people...
We put those protections in, and then immediately, within 20 years, we suddenly say, you know what, because we want everybody to do this, because we need it for our sagging popularity numbers, we're going to override all of those legal rights that we put in place there to protect people in these circumstances. We're just going to ignore them and wave them away.
I think me more than anybody in terms of the economic stuff recognized the danger a year ago, St. Patrick's Day night before when every place got closed, the danger in what we were doing to our economy. I just thought you can't do this for 2, 3, 4 weeks and expect everything to be okay. It just doesn't get that way. It's like stopping somebody's heart for 20 minutes and saying everything will be okay. It won't be. I've always said that the economy is very much like a human body. I mean, it either is all working or not much of it's working. And I sensed that early on. And I also, when I was a kid, I took smallpox vaccination. We took polio. I mean, obviously it saved, you know, the my generation from a horrible disease. I mean, the idea that we have trusted people along the way, and I don't know, was it a different world or what, or I just wasn't around to see all the other side of it. But this whole thing, it smelled from day one. The studies being done by Pfizer, and oh by the way, Pfizer's the guys that are selling all the shots, and the incredible screw up of the CDC all the way through from day one in China. From day one, I don't believe a word any of these people say, but I got to the point where I know that for most people, certainly for people my age, your age, the vaccine is a net positive. But then when you see stuff like forcing kids under 12 to get vaccines, at the same time Sweden's banning vaccine use for people under 12, Lou, there's something wrong here. It just smells. It's not like I don't want people to take a vaccine if it's available where they don't get a disease that people are dying from. It's not me. It's not you. But somehow or another, there's a stench to this. And I think a lot of people just feel that because there is, I don't want any part of it. I mean, or am I wrong?
Well, no, I mean, this is the discussion we had a week or two ago about the FDA's licensing decision. So you have a vaccine that is being taken under this emergency use authorization. That was the EUA was enacted last, I think, December. as soon as we got the vaccines out and as soon as they appeared to be safe, and they started pumping them out into the economy and telling people that, that, you know, if you take the shot, it's going to help you, especially if you're older. And many people said, okay, I assess the risks. The vaccine appears to be safe. There are probably some side effects that, that may or may not affect me, but the risk of the disease is significantly greater, so I'm going to take the vaccine. Okay. Those were all rational decisions. What happened, I think, is that the political leadership started to panic sometime in the May-June timeframe when the numbers weren't responding exactly the way they wanted them to. They are pushing this, you got to get vaccinated, you got to get vaccinated theme, and people weren't necessarily responding. And part of the objection was, hey, it's not licensed. So the political pressure on FDA now gets ratcheted up. We need a licensed vaccine. And FDA has gone, it's not ready, number one. And number two, if we license it now, where it's not, we're going to license it for people over the age of 16 plus. But that doesn't really help Pfizer. Because if that Pfizer vaccine gets licensed for people over the age or over the age of 16 plus, but no younger, then it doesn't fall under the protections of the Childhood Vaccine Injury Protection Act, or whatever that is, that was enacted in 86. That insulates manufacturers from liability, from the fiscal costs of liability, if we license it right now. And the Biden people said, we don't care, we need a vaccine, we need a licensed vaccine. And so FDA said, fine, we'll license something that doesn't exist here in the United States. And that way you could say the vaccine is basically the same. And they are, apparently. They're formulaically the same. It's the same vaccine, so you can say we've licensed it. But we're not actually going to license it. Because if we actually license it before it gets approved for children under the age of 12, if we do that, it's not going to have the legal protections that we need for Pfizer to be comfortable. So we licensed something called Comirnaty, which is manufactured by a German company. I believe it's available in Europe, but it's not available here. And we'll wait until we get the Pfizer vaccine licensed for 12 and under. And as soon as it's licensed for 12 and under, then we can license it fully here in the United States, and Pfizer will have liability protection comparable to what it's got right now with EUA. So there, I mean, that's the only explanation I could come up with that makes sense as to why FDA would keep that EUA in place, because that EUA comes with all kinds of problems and legal rights attached to it, like I just enumerated. And so I think the people in charge that are saying we got to get everybody vaccinated, we've got this inconvenient statute that gives people rights when they're being inoculated with an unlicensed substance. We're just going to waive all those, and we're not going to pay attention to them.
Well,
we're
going to
write a legal opinion that says it doesn't matter.
I think because of what's happened in my industry, I think somebody somewhere is giddy that the government is using essentially the companies to do their dirty work for them.
But who are these people? This OSHA thing, I mean, I understand that they put the language for the rule in, and they're looking at OMB and trying to get it approved. But a huge part of this OSHA announcement was to basically threaten companies: you better get your people vaccinated because there's this big rule coming down. And they don't even have to put the rule in place. A bunch of these companies run to kowtow to the government and say, "Oh yeah, we'll do it, and we're going to force our people to get vaccinated."
The flip side of it is they're going to say, because they're doing this for the trading floors, they're saying, I don't know the exact specs, but I keep hearing rumors, what they're going to say is, okay, you don't have to get vaccinated, but you got to get tested 3 days a week, and oh, by the way, it's $150 a test, because the testing people want to stay in business as long as they can. Hey, Lou, we don't have that much time. Can you comment a little bit on the John Gruden situation?
Oh, boy. I'll give you my thoughts on this. This obviously was a setup by the NFL leadership. Gruden does not like Goodell, and has always been kind of a loose cannon out there in terms of his coaching style. These emails the NFL has collected an incredible amount of dirt on all kinds of people. In the, I say it's dirt. It's dirt in the current environment on all kinds of people. And because of the, they've got access to 650,000 emails from and to Bruce Allen at the Washington Redskins. And they've got now the football team. They've got all these emails, this unfettered, unfiltered communication. And so their first target is John Gruden. And they release an email where he says some nasty things about the Maurice Smith and about Goodell and some other people, you know, 10 years ago. Now, there's no indication that Gruden is anything other than, a mouthy, smart-ass football coach. He's not a racist. His players have enjoyed playing for him. Nobody thinks that. But this language, these emails are used to fire him and to send a message to the rest of the coaches in the league. If you've got anything out there, communications, we've got access to it, and we will selectively leak it to damage you. I think a league that allows rappers who say horrific things at the halftime shows on their songs, or who put out, all kinds of horrible stuff, who tolerates players that beat up their wives or their girlfriends, that tolerates all this kind of stuff, a league that does that and yet somehow whacks this head coach, who's a Super Bowl winner, for heaven's sakes, that whacks this head coach has got some serious issues in terms of their credibility. But this was a hit job on Gruden.
Monopoly has its power, Lou.
Well, it does. And the question I've got is why the owner of the Raiders didn't basically come out and attack, the NFL, saying, "Look, this is my head coach. Here's what I know. I think it's manifestly ridiculous that private communications, this wasn't meant for anybody else's ears but Bruce Allen's, that these private communications are somehow being used to leverage the pressure and put pressure on us to remove him." He Gruden does not work for the NFL. He works for the Oakland or the Las Vegas Raiders. And we'll make our own calls. What I find absolutely nuts is the fact that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers immediately moved to remove Gruden from their Ring of Honor and in the process of erasing his whole coaching history there. That's their Super Bowl guy, and they're gonna eliminate him.
It's very Stalin-esque.
Football video games is taking him out, erasing him off the online version. It's crazy. It's like he committed some horrific crime. And all in response to this, this is nothing but it's a hit job by the NFL. And if I'm the other owners, I'm looking around going, we gotta put a stop to this now, because this is a commissioner who ostensibly works for us, running amok out of his offices.
He always has. Look what he did to the older players when Johnny Unitas was alive. I mean, when I tried to screw those guys.
Well, that was more of a union thing, but yes, I think Goodell is a disaster, and I've said this on the show. The management of the Colin Kaepernick thing was a total farce. The their ability to deal with domestic violence and crime issues has been problematic. This whole woke thing that the NFL has embraced has damaged the brand, and really, I think, caused a problem for them financially in terms of where they could be.
They make so much money.
And it's going to get worse.
They make so much money they don't care, Lou. We're going to talk about it next week. Are you going to try and ski this weekend?
No, I won't get up. Loveland's a little too steep for me, and there's only 14 inches on the ground, so that's not enough padding for me when I fall.
Yeah, that's right on a continental divide. That's got to be steep, but all right, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 39 now. NASDAQ Futures at 149. Back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. SP Futures 3850, NASDAQ Futures up 146. Not sure what all of a sudden got so bullish yesterday, but bullish for bonds, bullish for the market, and good thing we have Mr. Dan Janitas. He's going to tell us all about it. Dan, what's going on here? With inflation going to the moon, bonds are going up, and so are stocks. What's going on, bud?
Well, I think it's I've been in the camp all along that we are seeing real inflation, and obviously I think others are finally agreeing. Where we're seeing it is, clearly at the grocery store, at the pump, but we're also seeing it in other items. I was looking for a new dishwasher the other day, for example, and I've noticed a pretty significant increase in prices. So any products, I think, that are, pretty much everything across the board. I think the areas that are seeing it the most, though, are food and in particular meat. But I don't see anything changing, and I do see a trend, which I experienced myself this past week, where there are people quitting. There seems to be a little bit of a trend across different industries, travel in particular, hospitality, leisure, restaurants. And it's understandable in some cases why it's happening, but I think what will happen is in order to replace that or improve that or attract the right people for those positions, the company's going to have to pay more. Now, one of the things that I think helped the market a little bit yesterday, well, there are two discussions I heard that I thought were interesting. Biden was speaking about expanding the capacity at the ports to do 24/7. The workers there haven't been working nights and weekends, and he's talking about expanding that. I say that's great. You know, that's just what we need to do. We need to remain competitive. He also talked a lot about the focus on U.S. goods, not having to focus as much on overseas, and I think that's all good too. But the question still comes back to who's going to do the work and how are these private companies going to be able to pay people well enough to be working nights and weekends, for example, when they're already having trouble finding drivers. And so I think the issue of wages comes in, higher wages, and again, I think we spoke about this before, you know, some of the items, you know, gas prices will come down when oil prices come down eventually. So there is some transitory nature to that, but that transitory period, I think, is going to be expanded. And I think more of it's going to be impacted by
trying to find the right people, for companies trying to find the right people, they're going to have to pay more. And that's, there's no question about it. People have a choice right now because there are a lot of job openings. And in the case, for example, of goods coming from overseas, and the ports being full and supply chain issues, one way out of this is going to be higher wages, and that's going to continue to have inflation, so impact inflation on the upside. So, and again, as I've said all along, this is just part of the cycle. This is, we're an extended period of the cycle. People have forgotten that we're still, you know, business cycles have not stopped. We go through them. We've gone through them all through history, and there's no reason that it's going to be any different now. It's just we had this extra period of about a year and a half where everything was sort of put on hold, and now that things are coming back, we're in a different world, but we're in a world that's going to see higher inflation. One thing that did give me some hope also in terms of, you know, we talked about the market having a little better tone. Jim Bullard, you know, the St. Louis Fed president, saying, you know, we're gonna start doing something in November. You know, we really need to start tapering soon. And I think he's gotten a lot of attention, a lot of support in his comments. And he's been in that camp for quite some time. But I do hope that they can come to that agreement starting in November, because that's the direction we need to move in order to start getting some of these things under control. And the one thing that he did point out, which I think is very important, is for people to keep the distinction between tapering and rate rising. And they're talking about, you know, increasing rates starting next year, you know, where some of our European counterparts are already there and already making those moves. I think we're going to be doing that soon as well. And I think it's going to be good for the economy, at least in the short run. I don't think there's going to be any major problems, because we're seeing, you know, we may be seeing some supply issues, but this, we're not seeing demand issues just yet, and I really don't think that's going to change. So all of that being said, my big picture still, step back, 30,000-foot picture still, we are in an inflated asset environment. We have been in an inflated asset environment for quite some time. If you own property on the coasts, you know, real estate, you'll know that. If you are in an area like we are here in Florida, where we've gotten a lot of development, there's a huge amount of development, there's a huge amount of money coming from other parts of the country to build and expand in the housing. That trend, I think, is only going to continue, and people have already made their mind up that they're retiring and they want a second home and they want to go to areas that are parts of the country that are cheaper. That trend is it's on its way, so that's not going to change. But remember, the people that are coming from these other places have a lot of value, a lot of equity in their homes. And that amount has been inflated over the past decade, just as they have more money now in their 401k plans as they're approaching retirement. That money has been inflated. So we're seeing more money and more cash on the side and more cash coming into the market, I think, and that's going to continue to fuel and keep optimism and continue to fuel demand. And then when you go overseas, we're seeing demand picking up across the world as well. So that's going to only continue to fuel our economy. So I think the picture is one that's favorable. There are some adjustments that I think need to be made, because we certainly are in a different environment than we were pre-COVID. But I do think it's more optimistic than not.
Dan, I agree with everything you say, but I have to inject the word nominal. On a level that where you're pouring money into the system, everything you say is absolutely true, except for the fact that the dollar is worth less than it was. And the real part of this is lacking, in my opinion. And the unevenness of it is lacking. There's people that aren't with the gravy train, and I would hope one of these days, a lot of people, especially really bright people, will get off the train that says John Deere raised the prices because labor rates went up, and said, John Deere raised the prices because they could. Because that's why they're raising them. It has nothing to do with whether or not they pay people more. In the long run, I agree with you. The short term, it doesn't mean anything. If you and I are selling umbrellas and we look out the window today and it's raining, that price is going up. It has nothing to do with what we paid for the umbrellas, buddy.
Right. Absolutely. You know, the demand is there. So I do think when we start seeing rates go up, hopefully that starts in next year, hopefully the early part of the year. Some of that's going to come back into place. Economics has a way of balancing itself out over time. And I think, the higher rates are going to keep the growth controlled. And maybe having controlled growth is really important right now.
I really hope that you are 100% correct, because I'm surely no biblical scholar. It's been a long time since I was forced to read it, like in high school. But I will say one thing. The only reason why God was able to cut off the manna from heaven is because he had Moses in the middle to get bitched at and not him. I don't see any way these guys cut off the gravy train for the people who are the asset owners and risk the bubble bursting some. I think it's going to end horribly because they don't have the stones to do that. I mean, Bullard is absolutely correct, but I'll bet he's a voice in the wilderness on that board. And if they do what he wants them to do, they want no part of it. Nobody wants any part of it. I mean, if they do something that is remotely logical, and the market reacts 10%, the wailing and gnashing of teeth you're going to hear in this country is dramatic. And we know if they don't do it themselves, it'll do it on its own someday.
Exactly.
It'll turn into the Weimar
Republic. Not in a way that's going to be the most efficient or the best for our economy. There's going to be other factors that come in that are going to be more concerning that we don't necessarily have to see. This can be avoided. I think in this environment, we've been talking about how to invest, still with rates, the volatility across the board, but the volatility with rates as well. I still think rates are generally heading higher, and I do think the names and the style that we have has done extremely well recently, and staying in some of the names that we've spoken about, just being patient. But if, looking for income, we're still looking at the dividend payers, we're looking at preferreds, utilities, I think have run up a little bit here. I still like utilities long term. We talked about Spire, which is a natural gas company.
You still like those guys?
That has done well.
You like those guys? Now, how do you, when you talk, you and I are in the business of dealing with clients, and most of that is positive sometimes, but sometimes the explanations, you are in the, pretty much, you'd like to be probably all of the fixed income piece, but that's very, very difficult now. So you've managed to work your way into the 2-year to 3-year to things that make sense and kind of stay away from the 30-year 2% stuff. I would never think you were dumb enough to do that, because you're not dumb at all. What do you say to somebody when you buy a preferred or somebody who's looking for like long term, rates that you provide people? And I believe that because I recommend you to people. You know that. But what do you do to somebody if you buy something at 105 and you say, okay, Joe or Nancy, this is going to be it's a good one. It's out for like 3 years, and all of a sudden the thing's trading 115, and you go, I wouldn't pay 115 for it, and you sell it, even though you've done well. What do you say to people? They don't understand what happened. Most people don't. Well, how do you even have that conversation? Even though it should be an easy one to have, it's not.
Yeah, it's not. I think in terms of just discussing, where rates are today and trying to get some explanation, I usually use the analogy of your savings account or your checking account not earning any interest, and that we've been in this environment for quite some time. And although I don't think it ever, I don't think it always registers with people that, anybody who's in our age group who was used to higher rates when we were younger in a very different environment and knowing that you could put money in your savings account and make money, that they're still questioning why that's not the case now. So the explanation is just that, again, that I use is that it's part of the cycle. We've had a prolonged cycle like we did in the 60s where interest rates were very low. It's not a bad thing. It's good for the economy. It's good for the stocks. But there are ways, as I mentioned, to find yield, and you know, doing your homework, you can find some other opportunities, and whether they be preferred stocks or high yield, short term high yield bonds, that are going to benefit from an economy that is expanding, that is still, you know, where there is still growth. And I would say that keep it basic, people look at dividend paying stocks, and oftentimes you think of that as somewhat of a conservative play or a value play. But these companies are going to continue to grow their dividends, and they're continuing to grow their business. And if you like the business, it's a different way of earning that extra interest. But it's actually it's a way to benefit and to get yield in an increasing or a growth environment or a strong economic environment.
Well, Dan,
say that the way to get, and we're already there in terms of our investments, but the way to get, make money in an increasing environment is to invest in floating rate notes, bank loan notes. We have a high yield ETF called, it's a zero duration high yield, so it's, the rates have been, interest rates have been hedged out, so you're really just getting the underlying performance of the bucket of high yield bonds. These are, you know, this is what we do, I've had experience in this area. What we're doing now is we're looking for ways of making money in bonds when rates are rising. So there are ways of doing that, and, you know, again, if you're looking at something that resets, so you participate in that higher rate as the market, as rates go higher and you hold on to it, you're going to do well. And those names have run up a little bit recently within the last few weeks when we've seen the 10-year, run up 20 basis points or so, that these types of names are names that will do well. So what I'd say is that there are ways of protecting the portfolio. Every bond doesn't necessarily have to go to high premiums. My background, my training was really when something gets to, we generally like to look at bonds that are trading at a discount when we first purchase them. We don't want to be buying everything at a premium, but some names you buy at a premium to get that extra yield. The bonds, we call them cushion bonds. And what I say is that they are less negatively impacted by rates going up because you're getting generally paid a fairly good coupon or a fairly good dividend. So that's going to hold you through this period that is, that the foreseeable future that is still fairly positive, in the economy.
But Dan, you're talking about stuff that is in the, I'll say the eyesight of a real professional. I mean, I've been doing this forever. I would never wander into that area unless I talked to you about it. I mean, that's your specialty. Isn't that something somebody does at home by them? They're not going to find this stuff.
No, and it's actually quite difficult to find, even on, if you have an account, say, with Fidelity, because a lot of these securities are not even offered to the retail, and that's why it makes sense to put money with somebody who knows that has been doing this for 35 years and has that trading advantage. Trading advantage is particularly important with bonds and also with less liquid securities. So if you're buying, micro-cap stocks, which we do, you're going to have a much harder time trading those on a retail platform at Merrill Lynch than you would if I was making those decisions we were making those decisions.
We had with one of my groups, we had a big area. This is 2 years ago, Dan. You know about this. We had a real area. One lady's already ran a dividend. We had a dividend option for people who put money with us, and I'm going to say for 15 months. She did as well as anybody with any of the stuff that went up. She did spectacularly. It was all in price appreciation, and she ended up selling everything out. So people go, hey, you got this dividend fund. It sure as hell looks like it did really well. How about that? Why don't we go? Well, there's nothing left in there. We sold it all. I mean, right? I mean,
Right, no, exactly. I mean, that's the thing when you talk about the components of return for, both stocks and bonds, you have capital appreciation as a component, and a lot of people don't realize that you have that with bonds as well. You have your interest, income. In the case of the stocks that we look at mostly, you have dividend, and then you have reinvestment of that. And the reinvestment is really, I think, an important third component of return. So when you have all that combined together, you know, people can't just look at the price or just look at the interest rate. You have to remember that it's, there are three components of return to both equities and bonds.
Dan, next week when we have more time, I mean, I'll be like the retail guy because my brother does a lot of this, but I'm totally, I mean, I know what they are, obviously, but the idea of the various stuff that is inflation infused. I mean, some of them are the Fed has some of those, although I don't know how many they have left out there. They did years and years ago, and I think they kind of, I don't think they fell into disrepute, but people didn't care about them. What do they call those things? Between the Fed and the private ones. If you could walk us all through that, I know it would be a huge education for me. I mean, we really call them tips.
Tips, yeah. I was thinking tips, sorry.
But I mean, I know my brother still...
Inflation protected notes, yes.
He does some stuff for our clients in there, and he knows about it really well. But still, I don't think it's anywhere near. Used to a lot of them, like way back in the day. We don't do very many of them now, and people kind of even forgot they're there, I think. And you're saying that there's some private ones that sort of get you to the same place. I'm going to say nobody knows about any of this stuff. I mean, I don't think, I mean, unless, you know, there's a lot of people who do seek out those kinds of, returns, but still this stuff's hard to find. I mean, and you're right. You have to have a bond that trades. Otherwise, God help you if you buy the thing at 90 and the next day something happens and you got to sell it and you're selling it for 75 and you can't do that either. You know, so this stuff has to be somewhat liquid, even though you think you're going to hold. I mean, basically, you know, people aren't insurance companies where they're going to be there. They know they're going to be here 30 years from now, and they just buy the whole, you know, like municipal bonds. God, a few times we've had to sell those, and people have brought them in. God damn, it takes me a week just to get any kind of a bid on some of this stuff. If you've got some of these bonds that are, what do they call the tax increment areas, that kind of thing. Man, oh, man, there's nobody trading that stuff. I mean, the people that take those things are what? They're insurance companies, right? They say, we'll take it for 20 years. And we're never trying to trade.
It's generally longer-term players. Yeah, and I have those contacts just from having developed them for 35 years and know where that money goes and know who's going to have an interest in it. And you're right, it's generally not retail, although TIPS, for example, have done well and, you know, that people haven't forgotten about them. And they're, you know, right now they're even becoming more popular just because of the concerns of inflation that are on the horizon. So I think the reason that they may not be quite as popular today as they were a number of years ago is just the absolute level of rates is so low. So trying to, but the direction is still going to be positive because you're pulling out that inflation piece and you're hedging yourself. So just looking at different ways of hedging out the interest risk, if you will, or the inflation risk is important. And yes, knowing who the players are, knowing who the investors are in this area is very important.
And what I was mentioning earlier, I was talking about I was dying to say something about it because that's what I did at Pullman, was handle all the escalation clauses in the contracts that we had with the rail cars and with some of the suppliers and a little bit with the unions. Other guys did that more than me. But one thing back then, again, I mean, we talked about Lou, which you always got to do about, you know, what's going on in the world, and can you believe anybody? There really wasn't, I mean, this is, we're talking 1978. I mean, there were really, I mean, the idea that when the CPI went up, you know, 2% and a quarter, and you called your person at the, you know, MBTA or the people who did the trucks or whatever the big pieces in the railroad car, and there really wasn't a big, I'll use it, a big bitch fight regarding the CPI number. I mean, everybody pretty much said, okay, that's the number. I mean, whether we're idiots or we weren't, there was a trust in government, yes, that they were at least giving us the straight story. But I mean, if I had an escalation clause in my contract at John Deere, I'm going to say in the last 10 years, I've gotten what? I've gotten 1% a year and then 5% last year. And I'd be like the girl in Caddyshack. Thanks for nothing.
Right. Very little. And you know, it's kind of been the case across the board. I think with inflation, I think one of the things you're getting at too is just that the components of CPI were pretty straightforward and you could see them and there was no question that, you know, the news wasn't necessarily, there weren't as many opinions, let's put it that way, on the components of inflation. And now I think there's more questions on the components where people will say, hey, you know, you can still get a, I don't know if you get a cell phone cheaper or not, I don't think that's a good example, but you can get, or maybe any electronics because of the problems with semiconductors, that issue. But in general, I think in the last decade, because of technology, prices have come down in a lot of areas, and that, I think, overshadowed what has gone on with inflation. And I think the people that lose the most are the people that have, you know, salaries that are dependent on that, where they're not necessarily getting their cost of living wage, or they've lost out of that. And the answer back to some of the people who really aren't that, may not be that sophisticated, is, hey, you know, we haven't had that much inflation. But the truth is, these people should be getting some sort of an increase. And I think maybe that's what they're asking for today. And maybe that's what's going to be coming today. I don't mean today, but within the next year. And so it goes along with what you're saying as well. And I do agree that that's an important, a very important component of this that we need to look at.
Well, I think we almost, and we're not going to get it, Dan. And plus, if we did, it would be, you know, gut wrenching. We need a reset. I don't see that happening. You need to look at your CPI over the last 20 years and say, okay, it's up, you know, 0.57, and yet, college tuition's up three times, medical care is up three times, cars are up 2.5 times, houses are up 3 times.
Education.
Maybe this thing, however well intended it was on a monthly basis, maybe it's not telling the right story. I mean,
I agree, yeah. And I think that's why you have to look at, you know, you can't rely so much on those variables. And it's also, I think it's hard for those firms that have quantitative, investment management styles where they had inputs, and one of the inputs might be CPI, and you know, you have to really look at the components a little more carefully. And then I think even more so when it comes to your particular industry or your particular subsector, you have to look at what are really the driving forces, both on the cost side as well as the revenue side, like where and what could potentially impact them. And you got to look at supply and demand.
Well, if I was doing if I was writing the Pullman contract for the MBTA cars, which we had in 1977, I would never use the general CPI number. Now I'd pick out 10 things in there, steel and other stuff, and I would never even dream of using the regular number. Yeah, I don't think that's worked its way through the population yet.
I don't think it has, and I think, you know, a good example of that is just what we're hearing from the Fed, or what we're hearing from, you know, in terms of, I think they're still looking at numbers, and I think the same thing holds true. The same argument holds true when we're looking at when we're looking at employment and unemployment. And that's an area that I think also needs to be broken down more. I think we need to look at some of the actual statistics. I mean, this whole theme of people resigning or quitting, and but really where is it coming from, and what is driving that? And, you know, and at the same time, you have this theme, if you will, of people staying at work longer because they no longer have to commute. They're able to work from home and save the time and save the travel expense and have, you know, as they get in, go into retirement, have a little more flexibility, which has worked well for some people. So I think trying to lump it all together and come up with generic statements is difficult. I think that's what we do when we look at research, is we look down at the numbers and we look down at the specific situations that impact the industries we're looking at or the particular companies we're looking at, and we try to get an understanding. I mean, the best way for me to get information is to ask the CEO of the company we invest in, you know, what's going on with your labor? You know, what are the issues? What are your concerns on the labor side? And the stories are going to be different.
Oh, yeah, we got to go. We got to dish. And you, speaking of labor, you're not coming again.
Well, I know. I mean, unfortunately, this week I was one of those many people who was dealing with the cancellations from Southwest, which is, I guess, another whole story, or maybe a story that's somewhat related to what we're talking about. But I'm planning on getting there as soon as I can.
Well, now one of my buddies in college would say, gee, what does he think, it's his round?
Yeah.
Anyway, take care. Take care. I will see you when I see you, hopefully soon. SP Futures up 41. NASDAQ is up 170. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures up 40. NASDAQ futures up 159. The banking stocks, yesterday the earnings came out for like Wells Fargo and those guys, and they weren't all that hot. But now today, everybody likes Citigroup. It's up 111, and we've got Morgan Stanley is... Where do we have those guys? We got them right here someplace. I'll find them. Mentally, I'll find them here at some point. But they're up as well. So we got the XLE. I'm saying the XLF, which is the banking part of the S&P, up 1% this morning as well. Morgan Stanley's up 218 over 100, $100.75. So like I said, we got Dow up 282 now because it's the individual stocks in the Dow. Pretty much everybody's up. Honeywell up 258. We've got Microsoft up 335, looking like it's going to make 300. It's 299.66. Can't keep the good monopolists down, David. You know that. You know that's good for us. DAX up 162, 1%. FTSE up 53.7%. CAC around up 71, 1%. So Europe's finally getting a little bit of a rally here. I don't know why. I thought the deflation number yesterday would be bad, but evidently it was already expected or something. Nikkei up 410, 1.5. Shanghai down 3, call that flat. And we've got the Hang Seng is unchanged because they're not open. We're not sure why they're not open. Yesterday, again, the Dow was down 50 cents. S&P up 13. NASDAQ futures up 10. NASDAQ was up 105 yesterday, not the futures. Bonds, 10-year, unchanged at 1.54. The Bund, pretty much unchanged. Actually, no, they're down three basis points to minus 0.15. They were down to up to minus 0.111. David, I'm never going to get used to these interest rates being negative. I stumble on it every single morning, and it's been there for years. Japan, 0.08 positive, and that's unchanged as well. Oil up 91 cents, 81.35. Brent up 99 cents, 84.17. Natural gas up 16 cents, 5.75. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.43. We've got gold up 370, 17.98. It did blip over 1800 for a little bit, but now it's come back under that. Silver up 17 cents, 23.34. Copper up 6 cents, 4.58. That's a pretty good move in copper. It's 1.5%. And we've got crypto up 541 to 57,621. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports? We got no baseball anymore.
Well, there is baseball playoffs. We'll talk about that in a second. Good morning, 737 in Chicago. Currently the weather is 67 with light rain. We're going to hit 70. There's going to be some rains and clouds this afternoon. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 56 and clear, 80 and sunny today for them. Traffic's kind of messy this morning with all this rain. Eisenhower, Stevenson, all major highways are very busy. There's an accident right now on three right lanes are blocked on the Kennedy west before Kimball. In sports, Major League Baseball, Dodgers at Giants for game five tonight, and then the ALCS and NLCS will start this weekend. In NFL tonight, Tampa Bay is at Philadelphia. The Bears will play Green Bay at home this Sunday, and undefeated Arizona is at Cleveland. In the NHL, the Blackhawks lose their opener to Colorado 4-2, and Arizona opens up tonight at Columbus. And then the WNBA Finals. Phoenix Mercury beat Chicago Sky in Game 2, 91-86. Back to you.
The story about the Hawks, where they gave up, what, three goals in the first 10 minutes last night or something?
I didn't see the game.
Well, they came back. We only lost 4-2. John, are you with us?
I am, Tom. And how are you?
I'm doing all right. Somehow I have to dig through all my old emails. I got the most spectacular email. We're going to have to tweet it out to everybody. It's been years ago. But Kathy Durbin used to help us out on the show until she's doing a working for home thing and a bunch of other stuff. Anyway, Kathy, terrific lady. She used to get us all these wild guests. But she also did some of the most incredible research on the Internet. And when Lou was talking about the Tampa Bay is like scrubbing Gruden now out of their history books, I mean, you might know the answer to this, but I'll ask David because I love to screw with him. Who is the master of this in history, David, of like erasing people from history?
The master
of he had like 200 people working for him, and all he did was if he didn't like you, not only
well besides
kid,
Hitler.
Oh, he was a child compared to Stalin.
Stalin was the other one I was going to
say. Yeah, he was going to say he had what he had, John. He had photographers, he had artists. Where if you were basically in a painting next to Stalin and all of a sudden he didn't like you and he rubbed you out, the painting would be there 2 weeks later with the guy missing, and then the guy two people away would be have his arm around Stalin. He was masters of it. I mean,
and he had such an army of people to carry through on this ability. There's stories my brother told me of people who in Russia told my brother stories about if somebody fell on the wrong side of Stalin, whatever his name was alphabetically in an encyclopedia or whatever, all the librarians were under pain of death to go in and rip that page out of the encyclopedia and then stick in some other completely idiotic entry in place of it. And, of course, everybody looking at this encyclopedia would know it had been tampered with, but you think Stalin cared?
Well, Kathy sent me this picture of all these guys, what was it, like eight guys, on this bridge, and you could see the rail of the bridge, and you could kind of make out, you know, that there was a river there, and then there was another side. And I think Stalin was two people from the rail, and one guy's got, like, his hand on the rail, and they all got their arms around each other, and they all look like they're drunk. Well, all of a sudden, there's the next picture, and Stalin, like, had moved over a spot. The guy next to him was gone. I mean, is that what they're going to do to Gruden, to Tampa? I mean, what are we doing, John? I look at what's happening to people that I know and what's happening in our industry to people that I see. I don't see anything that's working at all, Jen. I think the courts suck. I think the way the police individually, I think they're spectacular. Collectively, I think they're a leaderless gang. Not even a gang in a bad word. I'm saying I don't think they do anything. They're totally ineffective. The state police on the expressways, could you do a worse job? I mean, is it possible to do a worse job?
Could you find any less evidence that there's any policing of the expressways than we have now?
But I mean, the mayor's office, I hear people are quitting right and left. I mean, the courts are, we don't even, we've decided that people who shoot people have more rights than the people that are dead. I don't know where that came from. Am I wrong here? I've tried to be as patient as I can in all this, but I don't, and then we have somebody like Kathy Wood come out and say, oh, people leaving the big cities is good for inflation. Really? When you have billions and billions of dollars of infrastructure you can't replace, all of a sudden everybody's going to abandon these places, that's good for society? I mean, John, what is everybody eating? Is there something in the food?
Well, it's just such tortured logic, Tom, and we're expected to just accept it somehow as being, you know, supported by data or whatever, which we never see, of course. And to me, the biggest example of this kind of, you know, we're in la-la land to such an extent now that you can't even, like, keep a straight face about it. I'm being pummeled lately in the few hours that I really watch any TV by these advertisements, commercials by the Cook County Health Organizations that are pushing people to get the vaccination.
Now who's paying for those?
I think it's got to be, you know, public health. It's got to be, you know, their county run. I mean, the individuals who appear on it appear all to be county employees, although you never see enough in the names or qualifications for any of these people that are on the screen to find out really who they are. They're probably very nice people, you know. Maybe they're very good doctors, too, but, you know, I don't know any of them. But the theme of it is you know, it's filmed in a setting that has all the charm of a police interrogation room, all black yeah. background, stark white coats on all these people, just kind of glaring at the camera, telling you, trust us, trust us, trust us, get the vaccine. And it's just a procession of passing names and faces, some of them looking at you, some of them looking at some, you know, something else. But the mantra, trust us, is like, why? If this is all you have to make people trust you, then you must be completely untrustworthy. But you're not supposed to demand any more evidence or whatever. This, the ads is supposed to give you some kind of warm feeling, and it does the exact opposite. It shows they're really running on empty. I mean, if you ask me to think Cook County has got its head on straight, whether it comes to the state's attorney's office or policing or anything else, and I should trust its doctors too, I'm sorry. It just doesn't wash with me.
Well, I've got to give you one piece of good news. Jobless claims are below 300,000 for the first time since the pandemic began. So I guess that is good news. But the reason why I asked the question about who's paying for it is they're actually a little-known favorite college rule. When it comes to political advertising, every station, so say we were we were still on the air, which I hope we will be soon, but say we were still on the air, we would have to, when it comes down to political season, whatever the hell that is, John, when would that be, like 3-4 months before the primary? I don't know.
365 days to cook out.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying there is a specific political season. I mean, I'm guessing. Well, a year from November would be the, I guess midterm elections, right? So the primaries would be in what, March? Maybe it's next January. I don't know. But if you were with a station, all of a sudden you would get a, assuming we were selling the ads, if we weren't, then the station would just do it. They want to know what your minimum ad price is. The reason for that is, you don't want it to go too low because the politicians have the ability to advertise on your station, not just your show, which is a problem, for like the minimum you charge anybody. So that's why you'll see if you ever try and go to a station and you want to be on, say we were on a station and somebody were to say, God, I don't want to pay $100, 30 seconds to be on what you guys, or $200, whatever the number would be. That's when you say, okay, I'll tell you what, we'll give you some freebies on, you know, Matty Weber's sports show in the afternoon or some crap. The reason why you do that is you never want to say, okay, because it's early in the morning, we'll do it for $25. Because that means a politician can come in and buy airtime or commercial time for the lowest price that you essentially publish. But he gets to, but then he might say, oh, but I want that on, you know, Stocks and Jacks, which is your hottest show. Even though, like, the afternoon guys or the midnight guys might be getting, you know, $10 a spot. But you gotta be careful about doing that. So I'm wondering if this stuff from, like, the county falls into that same category as a political ad in terms of you have to give them that sort of price. And I have nobody, maybe Matty Weber would know, but I mean, the rest of the people, I think, probably don't even realize this is kind of what's going on with the ads. Plus, if I have, if I were to have on during the season, if I were to have, say Joe Biden on, you know, if I don't really want to be on my show, but not that I'd want him either, but immediately if the Trump people called, I would have to let him on for the same period of time. For like the same, if, even if it's a 20 minute ad, then I'd have to talk to Trump for 20 minutes. I don't know which would be worse. I mean, I don't want to do either, but I mean.
Well, you know, the county commercials that I'm thinking of probably qualify as PSAs because they are, I mean, this is the way I would argue it, that they are really, you know, they are not pushing.
Well, you have those two, you're right.
Say, but,
yeah.
But there used to be something called the Fairness Doctrine where the example you give of balancing any kind of political speech on the air with opposing political speech in the interest of fairness, that's gone completely out the window.
People are just more careful. But I mean, if 10 people run for mayor, and if I had, you know, Lori Lightfoot on for 5 minutes, and you know, Lard Daly was still alive, walking up and down the street with his sandwich sign, if he asked, I'd have to let him on for 5 minutes and give him an interview too. So the last thing you want are 10 people demanding interview time when you don't want to talk to half of them. You know, I mean, so you have to be careful about stuff like that. And what you're talking about, yes, I'd forgotten about that. There also is a public service thing that all during the day, the 24-hour period, the station actually has to, because I still get from a couple of stations we used to be on, I'm still on their email list. So I'll get the list of people that they're approving for these public service and do we have time on our show type of thing. So, yeah, there's political ads, there's public service, and there's all kinds of categories, basically.
And a station, you know, a mega station like WBBM confines all of their PSAs to, you know, the hours between midnight and 6 a.m. or 5 a.m., probably. And, you know, that's when they run them, when nobody's listening to them.
See, but you can't do that if they buy ads.
Right, right. So, I mean, they're either bargain basement rates or they're giveaways somehow, and they do it in a way so that it doesn't conflict with their money-making program.
Well, you just wonder what, you know, what the liability is and this stuff when you have, you know, people in government pushing. I mean, I don't know, Jan. First of all, this is never going to happen to any one of us, but if I'm sitting in the Oval Office, and, you know, I would hope that, I think somewhere along the line, and Roosevelt, I think, was a master at this. I mean, I get this feeling because I read The Winds of War, right, and how he had, according to that, Herman Welk, he had all kinds of people who were writing him personal letters about observations all around the world that they, and that's essentially what the main character was at, what was the guy's name? Pug Henry. Captain Victor Henry. He was the naval liaison to the Berlin embassy, correct? Then was that when he started out?
Yes.
And Roosevelt told him, look, in the diplomatic pouch, don't even tell your admiral, which got Pug all nervous, of course, I want you to write me a letter once a week, tell me what you've observed. I mean, did the submarine manufacturers go on two shifts? Are they still doing one shift? Are they working weekend? All the stuff that you notice that nobody else would that I want to know about. And I would hope that would be kind of our style. Now, I would hope that I would be on the president, you know, the speaking relationship with the president of Sweden. I think it's Sweden, but that just basically banned COVID shots for kids under 12. Now, before I walk out in front of 300 million people and demand they start getting shots for their kids, I got to call this guy, John, and say, hey, Helmet, or whatever the hell his name is. I mean, I don't know what some Swedish, I don't even know too many Swedish people. Hey, buddy, I'm just about to go out and give this thing. I see you've gone absolutely the opposite. What are you seeing that you made you say that, and could you please send it to me? I want to read it before I make a fool out of myself. I mean, I would have to do that, John. It's just me. Why is it that, how can we have two countries of that magnitude with scientists that we have, both countries winning Nobel Prizes right and left, how can we come to two totally separate conclusions like that?
Well, we do it, we're able to do it, I think, because the news about what's happening in Sweden, for example, is given minuscule coverage, first of all. And a lot of this, of what's happening in Europe is given no coverage at all. So the blowback against mandates in Italy and France and Denmark that never gets any mention in American media, ever. And you really have to go to other outlets, or you have to go somewhat underground, below the radar, to find out that there's these cataclysmic demonstrations all the time. So if the people in the White House know what's going on in Sweden and the background to it, and I'm sure they do, but they've decided this is a counter-narrative, this is not what we want pushed, and not only don't we want to push it, we're not even going to let it escape. What you mentioned about Roosevelt is really true, and what it shows, I think, is that he was a master of intelligence, that he knew the ways that he could get information that you couldn't trust bureaucrats to find, and that he could get people who could transmit it without much filtering because of his personal connections to them, and it was therefore better information. So he had people like Eleanor Roosevelt, who was constantly away from Washington, doing work for him and her friends and, you know, journalists, whatever, who were very much, you know, excuse me, time
to wake up.
Yes. And Churchill, too. They had a coterie of people who were very close to them, with Churchill's daughter-in-law, who became, you know, later on an American citizen, and under Clinton, she was the ambassador to France, and Pamela Harriman. I mean, these are people who were, by their nature, kind of schooled in how to get information that nobody else could get. Journalists, the typical journalists, couldn't get it, let alone some bureaucrat sitting in Washington. So, and they used it. I mean, they listened to it, and they had enough of it where they tended to give the impression that they had their finger on the pulse, which to a great extent they did. But it was a pulse that they got by circuitous methods. And it's not the sort of thing that we have really seen any evidence of lately. I mean, maybe Biden or people like Trump or whatever have the same sort of access to
I don't think so.
But it isn't coming from journalists.
I'll bet they didn't. I mean, one of Roosevelt's interesting stories was he got in there, what, 32, right? So, well, actually, he didn't even get, you didn't even get in the office till March of 33, right? You didn't even, inauguration was in March or something those days?
Yes, before they changed the inauguration date.
So he, I don't think it was his idea, who the hell knows, but, Hopkins was his right-hand man, right? So
Harry Hopkins, yeah.
One of Eleanor Roosevelt's, I'll say, girlfriend, rumors that she was more than that, but who the hell knows, and who cares? Anyway, she was a journalist, big, heavy-set lady, and she was really good at it, I guess. So Hopkins said, I got a job for you. never showing up in Washington, right? Well, they gave her a driver in like a 1932 car and said, I want you going around the whole country, basically, and writing to me and letting me know how bad this depression really is. Because, I mean, they had newspapers, but, I mean, nobody... And she started out from Washington, and I think the upshot of it was she went all over the country, and I think the two worst groups, it was sort of a tie, were the coal miners in West Virginia, who essentially were putting bacon grease and sawdust and having that for dinner, and the sharecroppers in the South. And I think she let back to them that what was happening with the sharecroppers was, the government was sending money to some of the farmers with the stipulation that it was supposed to get shared down, sort of like the stuff we gave to the companies to pay people in last year. None of this ever really changes in human events, does it, Chan?
No.
And the farmers, of course, weren't sharing with the sharecroppers. Go figure. So some people from the north, you know, kind of went down and were having demonstrations, and of course a lot of them ended up at the end of a rope. In the meantime, they tried to pass a federal anti-lynching law, which up till the time had the longest filibuster ever. How's that for a news piece? The longest filibuster ever was to stop an anti-lynching law, because we wanted people's necks at the end of a rope. Some of this history is pretty awful. But the way they went, anyway, this lady wrote every couple of days, probably, dropped something off at the post office, and it was a letter right to Hopkins or Roosevelt. Saying, I was in this town, God, did it suck. You know, I mean, you wouldn't believe what's going on here. So I think they had a really pretty good idea, even though it was only one person, and it probably took her a long time without an interstate highway system. Can you imagine going countrywide in some 32 piece of junk and without roads? I mean, with roads that were useless. They ended up with probably, I think Roosevelt had a real good idea how bad things were.
it was very helpful to somebody like Roosevelt, who gave the, you know, at least the impression of being a traitor to his, you know, family background. You know, he sold himself, and people bought it as he was a person of the masses, that he understood everybody's suffering, he could personalize it and incorporate it in his policies, and everybody had the sense that, well, this is a guy who knows I exist, people like me, and is thinking about us when he does everything. And it's particularly important for an autocratic president who, you know, really doesn't have to do any of this exploration into people's real stories, to have enough people doing it for the president so that you can at least give the impression that someone is listening to you, and if I tell you to do something painful, you're doing it because, you know, I've thought all about you in making such a decision. It's just what we don't have now. And all of the things that people are supposed to do, just accept the fact that there's such poor and such little policing. This is somebody thought of us when they made the policy of what cases the state's attorney is going to bring or not, or a vaccine mandate where, I mean, how could you not know what the blowback is going to be when 50% of your police force, as it is in Chicago, are not going to get the vaccine, and they may be put on unpaid administrative leave tomorrow?
Well, especially,
does anybody really think that somebody making that kind of decision has your interest at heart or my interest at heart? No. And so there's a lack of interest in even giving the impression that somebody is feeling anybody's pain, and it just becomes now a loyalty oath, Tom. We're asked to accept the fact that you can do this, and we're not supposed to criticize your ability, and if we defy you or say we're not going to buy that, we're criminalized, we're deprived of our jobs, our income, whatever. What an appalling situation.
Well, at the very least, I'm going to say, since policemen went to work every day during the code and they get to sit on their ass at home like a lot of people, I'm going to say that we're a non-defensible number. I'm going to say that at least two-thirds of policemen have already had it.
As you would expect, just because they are around people in tough situations, close up, too close for most people's tastes, in breaking up fights or, you know, confronting people in domestic disputes, whatever. People without masks, people without a care in the world, what they're giving to somebody else.
Why don't we, I mean, just this is just me, and I think guys would probably do it if you were the right leader and say, we just took a random sample of 200 policemen. Do you mind if we give you a antibody test? Because we'd like to know if 90% of the force has already had it. And what if it comes out that they have? Then what is everybody going to get a vaccine for?
Well, that would make me think that somebody at least has thought ahead of what we're really trying to accomplish here. If it's all about just controlling people's behavior and submitting to authority, they're doing a pretty good job convincing me of that. It certainly has nothing to do with health anymore.
See, I think
health outcomes.
All right, we got to dash down. But I think what's happening in our industry, making people keep track of other people's jobs, I think it's coming from somewhere, and I don't know where, because it was happening during Republicans and Democrats. So I can't blame it on one or the other. SP Futures still up 39.50, so right about there. As if he's on 157, we haven't really moved. Looks like an up day today. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.